Welcome back, folks. Good to have you here with us here on the Mark Steiner Show and your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. All of us were horrified when we watched the news about the fire that took place in Oakland in Fruitvale of the ghost shop, and the numbers are still growing of people who may have died in that fire. I think it's up to 36 and maybe more. It's a huge, huge tragedy. And it touches everybody, I think. You know, there are the social and political questions involved in this as well. But it touches people all over. A friend of mine sent me this. I'll just share this with you before we introduce our guest, who had a son who lived there for a time. This is anonymous. She wrote in, "I'm still unsettled about this. My son, who lives there, plays in several bands from time to time, plays gigs in places like this. He attends events like this all the time. I was happy when I learned he was alive early Saturday morning. Sadly, he lost a friend in that Oakland fire. He said that every one of his friends lost a friend that night." So I'll leave it there. But there's more of things like that coming in. And we're going to talk about all this. Nihar Bhatt is with us. Nihar Bhatt is with San Francisco's Surface Tension Collective. And Nihar, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Amy Reed is with us in the studio. She's one-third member of the Baltimore Girl Power Collective, one half of Chiffon, solo performer, DJ, and producer from Baltimore. Good to have you in studio.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And Person Abid is with us, an artist and part of the Bell Foundry who believes that black women and children are at the bottom line of the housing crisis in Baltimore. And Person, welcome. Good to have you with us as well.
Hello.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. You can by email, you can also tweet us at Mark Steiner, jump onto our Facebook page. And I'll be reading some Facebook pages, one by my former producer, Cricket Aronson. 410-319-8888 is the number. Nihar, let me just start with you. I know you only have a little bit of time with us, and and again, I'm sorry for the people you lost in that fire. Friends, I mean, this was very hard, but talk a bit about, if you could, just for a moment, about the conversations you all are having about why this kind of thing happens and what the kind of larger pieces of this are about.
Sure. The reason why we do warehouse parties, why this type of thing happens, is because of the many people that can't identify with the mainstream, bar or club scene. I'm involved in a lot of events that happen in all kinds of venues. But it's really important that we have spaces like this where the consumption and sale of alcohol is not the central motivating factor, the central imperative.
So, but when you have a fire like this, and then we understand now that the person who owns the building could be charged with murder or manslaughter, and that's being contemplated. But how does this relate to the reality that we have spaces like this in every community? And maybe part of it has to do with the fact that people cannot afford rents. We don't create spaces that are affordable for young artists and others. I mean, how much does that play into this,
That's absolutely right. The fact is that people end up living in places like this because it's sometimes the only option for housing, because it offers a different type of way of living, and there's less and less of this kind of housing available. And that was already true before this disaster, and now and it's one of the reasons why people choose to compromise and live in unsafe spaces like this because of the crisis. I mean, the Bay Area where we are, it's one of the most expensive places right now, certainly the most rapidly rising rent in the world. And and that's one of the reasons why people would choose to live in such an extreme situation, and also do events in such an extreme situation. And it seems like this crisis, after this happened, we see that there are a lot of different people that are going to further an agenda that helps the developers and those that would colonize even more space, make this crisis even worse. And that's one of the things. That's one of the things I know that you're seeing in Baltimore, and we're seeing here. Actually, there's already been in an eviction notice for a group, our living space in West Oakland that was served yesterday in direct response to this crisis, for instance.
And you were there when the fire broke out?
I was.
So I'm glad you got out. But I mean, that in itself must have been just so, I don't even know how to begin to think about it, chillingly frightening for you.
It absolutely was. You know, besides having to grieve all of our friends, that night, the realization that, more than half a dozen people that were very important to me were lost. Spending my time thinking about what I have lost, it was only much later that me and some of the other friends around me that also escaped realized that we had had such an incredibly near-death experience. I mean, it is pure chance that I survived, and, it's very concrete why, that I would have died. It's not a hypothetical.
Right.
If any number of things went differently, I would be gone.
So did you, and I'm going to ask the folks here in Baltimore in a moment of the same kind of thing. Did you ever contemplate something like that could happen given the state of the place? I mean, I was saying before we went on the air to Amy Reed that, I'm way beyond my 20s and 30s now. But when I was in my 20s, I lived in spaces like that. We had a Revolutionary Arts Co-op under a bridge in a rickety old house. Where we put on shows and bands came and we made all kinds of artwork, and those things were happening was a collective, but it was a fire trap. We knew it. I mean, but that's where we lived. So I'm just curious about the kind of conversation might have taken place about understanding how dangerous a place may have been. Nahar? Did we lose Nahar? Okay, well, let me come. Wait, see if you can get him back. We'll come back to our folks. Nahar, are you still there? So, Amy in person. So, let me just bring you into this. I think that there, one of the things Nahar said was a reaction to closing a place in Oakland. Some people think that what happened in Baltimore, yes, Amy, was a reaction to what happened in Oakland. They say it was because somebody made a complaint. But what do we know?
Right. I mean, I guess that's all too linked in time for that to be a coincidence. And I think what Nahar said is really important about cultivating this community in a space. So you just deal with the things that aren't right, and you know they're not right. You know, you live with asbestos, or you live with lead, or you live with mice, and you accept it because it's so important to be able to create that community that you can't find in commercial bars or venues or things like that. And to hear someone say that across the U.S. is also just furthers that need for community and that idea that, like, it's happening, it connects people across and, like, what they're feeling over there. You know, like, we feel it strong because those spaces are so prevalent here in Baltimore as well.
Person, you want to jump into that at all?
Yeah, I think that the tendency to need to build space as queer people, as people of color, as young artists who don't find a place to engage or connect otherwise, that's always going to not just connect us with one another, it's going to connect us to developers who want to take over the spaces that we move into and we put our energy and our lives into. And I think that pairing is always going to be together. A lot of people are saying that shutting down the Bell Foundry is a response to Oakland, but the truth, I think, is that it's an excuse. They're actually using the tragedy to motivate something that they've been wanting to do for a long time. If you look at the Bell Foundry, from a distance, it's clearly a spite house. It doesn't belong next to the large social services building that was just installed or what currently, I guess, is marked up for the Greenmount East community or neighborhood. In that way, I would really question what the city says about it. I think that the city's had a track record for, breaking up spaces. We remember the legitimate venue legislation that was being discussed a few years ago, and then the like what coincided with that was the breaking up of whatever after hours programming people were putting together, maybe in their living rooms. And I think that tendency is going to continue on the part of the city, most cities.
So, and Harlan, before you have to jump, which I know you have to do, I don't know if you heard what I said earlier, which was that the need for artist spaces we're talking about now and what this might really be about, but also, you know, people being aware that when we live in those spaces, that those spaces are dangerous spaces.
Yeah, it's not true.
We were talking
Let Nahar jump in. I'll come right back to you, person. Nahar?
Yeah. So I would say that, you know, first of all, not every space that is an artist collective is a dangerous space.
No, right,
you know,
right,
there,
right.
There are a lot of them right. that are more safe, you know, than some of the sort of mainstream, you know, bars or clubs I've been to that, you know, may or may not be up to fire code. There's nothing about it being a warehouse or an artist space that makes it necessarily less safe. But it is true that often the landlord, you know, the absentee landlords or, you know, all kinds of characters that reside in these areas can be unbelievably negligent. And, the you know, that's true for a lot of different landlords, but I think it's often prevalent. But the problem is when these types of spaces are punished, it's not those people that have been negligent that pay the price. It's the renters. It's the people who live there. And in this case, it was the people that were part of this event. And it's one of the reasons why some of us have been calling for an amnesty for spaces like this who want to work to get up to code. You know, like we need to sort of offer resources, you know, and an amnesty so that the people have an actual interest in making things safe, or the people who live there, the people that sort of spaces there, they're the ones who should be the ones to direct this and make that happen. They can only do that if there's amnesty. And we also want to call for there to be some kind of task force or something to help for the city to collaborate with artists to make public space for art that's safe. Because I think that that's, you know, the respecting that activity of doing sort of late night celebration and dance, which is not something that is about the modern rave. It's about, you know, a basic human thing that's been happening since the beginning of civilization, you know, having space to do that.
And a person was trying to say what before we come back to Amy and go to the phones here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think it's unfortunate that there is no resource like Nihar is talking about. There isn't a group of people who are going to come out and do an assessment, apparently, even though the city code might say something about warnings, issuing you warnings and then coming for multiple inspections. We got get your stuff out in 1 hour, and then we had our doors boarded up, and we're actually all waiting right now to get back into our space on Federal Street, and the city is late. So we have a huge crew of people here ready to help us you know, get all of our stuff from our base, cannot do that. Like, that's the kind of tone that the city sets. It's not, we're going to come in and make an assessment. We're going to give you advice. We're going to talk to your landlord. No, it was none of that. We had a police officer in our living room demanding that we get out. And I don't think that the city really has, like, any intentions of renovating buildings when they're in any type of shape, which is just part of the paradigm of the city and the way that renters are treated and the way that buildings that need work are treated. There's an attitude about, like, you know, replacing or disposing of what's happening and then moving on.
And Amy, let me let you jump in before we hit the phones here before we have to roll.
Well, just like both what Person and Nihar are saying is that, like, it's this idea that the people are being punished that live there instead of being supported and helped, and it's not fair. It seems like, I don't know, like the landlords should have been taking care of the problems that make these spaces, what they're saying are not up to code or things like that. It's like to force people out of a space. Again, it's like it's not their fault that they're in the situation that they're in. That should be the responsibility of the landlord, and they should be offering people their spaces to be while they fix it up or something like that. It doesn't seem legal.
I'm going to read this piece here. And Nihar, I know you have to run, Nihar, but I appreciate you taking your time with us. And again, all of us here, I am really very sorry for all the people you've lost in there. And we hope to stay in touch.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Let me go to the phones here, 410-319-8888. Merrick, you're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning, all. Good morning.
Good morning.
I think that what happened at the Bell Foundry was really not appropriate. I'm wondering why the city did not want work with the owners or renters in that space. And it's ironic because I do remember a couple of years ago this idea of the creative class and luring artists to Baltimore to change the trajectory of the city. And so now it seems kind of punitive and reactionary. And I'm wondering what this is really about. Is this some type of building grab for development in that area? And it needs to stop, because at the end of the day, artists and working class folks and people of color and queer people are using these spaces because the rents are going up and it's too high. We have to make a compromise. This is unacceptable. And I would hope that the new mayor, who's was it design school, is near that space,
yes,
would find it in her heart to compassionately deal with this situation and deal with the situation of working class artists who are trying to make Baltimore a better place. Thank you.
Merrick, I appreciate the thoughts. Always good to hear from you. And as another comment in here from one of my producers, from Mark Gunnery, just wrote another thing about safety. He writes, is some DIY spaces have explicit stances against racist, sexist, transphobic, and homophobic behavior in ways that bars and other venues don't. This allows people to feel safe in ways they aren't necessarily in bars or other venues. It's not perfect, but it's a different way that some of these venues actually are safer than mainstream venues. So, I mean, that's a big piece of this, too. I think that, I mean, we forget the role of this, and I think that maybe the horrible tragedy in Oakland, the closing, at least temporarily, we don't know what's going to happen, of the space that many of you were in, and of the load of fun being shut down before that, maybe this can engender a conversation where we can figure out how to do things differently. You know, the open space for working artists and people who really bring the life of a community to bear.
And I think that's part of the issue, is like this dynamic between how do we support what's already happening without destroying it. And there are initiatives that kind of seem like they're doing that, but it doesn't work. Just recently, like, I personally tried to apply for the City Arts Building, and we got rejected. And so it's just like, if, you know, that was, we were looking at it as like an ideal situation. It just wasn't what it seemed to be. So, again, and I think,
right,
I think that someone said something earlier that was really important, too, and it's just like developers working with artists, like, how do we have that conversation, and how do artists become part of that process?
Right, and not just the artists who are able to sell their works for $5,000 a pop.
Right, exactly.
Right. So I'm going to turn to person here, but let me just read this piece that Cricket wrote in, who lived at the Bell Foundry for a long time. And I'll read just a piece of it. She said, living there was exhilarating, infuriating, confusing, maddening, inspirational, scary, fun, productive, and always, always chaotic. Whatever else it was important to me artistically and personally. Spaces like this are such a mixed bag of artists. I wrote a bunch of my own work there, put on festivals, watched incredible shows and parties happen, and got to live in a space with my best friends. On the other hand, the scumbag landlord, now in jail on drug charges, kept our security deposit, and we lost a ton of money after pouring a ton of time and energy into the space. We got sick from the air, and I'm sure were insane toxins. Actually, human fecal matter poured down from the second floor into our kitchen, and we kept living there because we believed in something intangible that we were creating. This is what happens when art spaces are owned by people who are just biding their time until they can sell to a more profitable space. I'll just read one other paragraph. Artists live and work in spaces like this is complicated because we need lots of room and lots of community to make work, and we need it cheap because there certainly isn't much financial reward for this sort of thing. Without the Bell Foundry and many spaces like it in Baltimore, there would be no art scene here. Considering the myriad of ways the city has used the very same art scene to gentrify neighborhoods and market itself, you'd assume that it would have an interest in it continuing, and maybe they think that enough of the organic stuff has happened that the sterilized development version, I'm looking at you, City Arts, fine as an apartment building that, but hardly a mecca for artistic creation or shows, is all we need. I wish I believed this was for anybody's safety, but she wrote a great deal more, but it was an amazing piece she wrote. Go ahead, person.
Well, I think that the, you know, the highs and lows, the double-edged sword of renting live workspace and having to, work within the litigious framework that we have for housing is a problem. I think that, honestly, looking to institutions like BOPA, City Arts to be solutions is a little bit, I think, of a distraction for me personally. I would like to see an entire city of artists, especially the ones who are regularly getting funding from institutions that are tied into development, into just changing the housing paradigm altogether, changing how things work, changing how evictions happen for everybody. I think that when artists organize for artists, there's something critical that gets lost and it gets diverted away from other precious movements. I think of the Right to Housing Alliance's 7,000 Families campaign and the people who are affected by Baltimore's housing crisis on a daily basis. At a certain point, while I know that queers, Black artists in the city who have rallied around the Bell Foundry, especially in the last 6 months, need spaces like this, but everybody needs spaces. And this type of energy and this investment towards figuring out a new paradigm in housing, I hope, yields something more than City Arts 2 or 3 or 4. I want to see an art scene that gets behind a Black arts and entertainment district that Abdu Ali has been calling for. I want to see an art scene that wants to see no more evictions over tax or water bill or for any reason. I don't know.
You're good, man. You said a lot, person. I know you're also waiting outside to get back in the building to see what you can get.
It looks like they're just now unbolting the door.
Good, good.
Kind of exciting for those people here.
And I read the piece in the city paper about the officer confronting people who want to go back in and get a cat, which was pretty horrendous that he had to be that rude to people who were just being shown the door, which we'll also link to. But a closing thought from you, Emmy.
I guess I just hope that the legality of everything that's happening at Bell Foundry gets looked into. And personally, I agree with you completely that the artist separation between the Baltimore community and just communities in general needs to be addressed as well. And we'll be stronger if we're unified, and we got to come together and find ways to do that and hold people accountable for that.
Yeah, and I think that what you all are saying is what just happened here with the Bell Foundry is really important for us not to just let go, because it is part of the whole larger picture of housing, the whole larger picture of how we think we should and can develop a city like the one we live in. And that, to me, is kind of really critically important for us to just not let go by the wayside. So I want to thank all of our guests who came here today. I just heard a person, Abid, jump off. They're just opening the Bell Foundry doors so people can go in and get what they had there. He was joining us from outside the Bell Foundry as we spoke. Person Abid is an artist and part of the Bell Foundry who believes that Black women and children are at the bottom line of the housing crisis in Baltimore. Amy Reed is in the studio. She's one-third of the member of the Baltimore Girl Power Collective, half of Chiffon, solo performer, DJ, and producer from Baltimore. Amy, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And I want to thank Nihar Bhatt for joining us earlier, who is with the San Francisco Surface Tension Collective, who was at the ghost ship when it caught on fire and lost many friends there. Our hearts go out to all those in San Francisco, Oakland, I mean to say. It should be a bellwether for us, no pun intended, to think about how we want to have housing and how we keep artists alive in our city. Thank you all for joining us. We're going to take a short break and we take a switch to Europe and see what these elections in Italy and Austria say to us in America and why they're important to talk about. Don't go away.